Let me tell you about the new sports app we've launched as a part of our USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download the USA Today Sports Plus app from the Apple or Google Play stores today. USA Today Sports Plus. Fan harder.
Hello and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson. I am joined, as always, by Nate Atkins. We are here to recap kind of really the end of the season, but mostly Chris Ballard's press conference today. Nate, this is Nate's first time going through a Chris Ballard press conference. I tried to tell him there would be a lot of information. Nate, I'm going to assume you did not think I meant that much information.
I wasn't prepared for 66 minutes. And it was like information, it was like anger, it was like humor sometimes. It was just like the full range. It was so unlike the ones that I've been a part of where it's almost like GMs are just kind of like trying to put a spin on everything. And it feels like they practiced it for a week. Like Chris sits down and he's just like, well, you know me, I'll be here a while. And then like we ran out of questions and he's like, come on, keep firing. He made fun of you for having a list of 53 and not asking all of them. So it's like he was just there, like everything was on the table, which was just cool. And also kind of admirable because there is, you know, there's a lot to criticize and question right now, this whole franchise. And it was kind of cool to see him be real about that and even talk in terms that fans would. When he said, like, we got our ass beat by Jacksonville. We embarrassed our owner and our city. And yeah, so it was refreshing. It was a lot. And I think we will have no shortage of stories to write the next 2 weeks.
I actually did get to all of them. The hard part when you have the list of 53 questions is scrolling through it on your laptop screen and trying to figure out which ones you remember him hitting at that point and which ones you didn't. Towards the end there, I was just ticking them off. But he actually did, I think, get to all of them, including one, except for one that he hadn't thought about, so I didn't get an answer out of it. He liked the question, whatever that means. I think the most important thing, though, is, and the obvious place to start here, is we've now heard Frank Reich speak twice. We've heard Chris Ballard speak for an hour and 6 minutes today, and at no point has anyone said anything that makes me think Carson wants to be the starting quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts next year.
Yeah, not even a hint. Because the thing with these is, like, usually they like to keep it open-ended, and so I figured there'd be, and I didn't figure they'd ever come out. They can't, with a straight face, come out after the way that season ended and be like, yep, he's locked in, he's our forever guy. Because he did kind of, to quote DeForest Buckner, shit the bed down the stretch. DeForest was saying that about the whole team, but that's kind of how Carson played those last two games. But anyway, I did think that they know that Carson is a guy who kind of has wavering confidence. And I thought they would give him some kind of boost of like, you know, we believe in him. We want him to do these things. We're going to work with him. You know, all these things that you say until like there may be that moment where you're just like, well, we drafted somebody else, so things changed. Like that's usually how this goes. Instead, this came out from the start and everyone very consistently saying, you know, I can't promise he'll be here. And really, the more you read into it, it sounds like it's almost likely that he won't be here. And not sure, you know, you don't want to read too much into it, but I will say that Frank Reich and Chris Ballard both met with Jim Irsay for a long time after this game. Jim Irsay told Mike Chappell that he is going to create major change after this. But those two are back. They're not going to fire a coordinator. And so you start wondering, what's the change? And I would not be at all surprised if they kind of already have their minds made up of, you know, we understand what Wentz is at this point. And that's the weird part is like that's why they made the trade, is they understood Carson, what he could do. But it's like you add an extra 17 games in this offense with these players, and you're like, we also know what he can't do. And that's just kind of how it felt to me.
The telling quote for me today, I was kind of already here. I felt like I felt like there was some stuff in Frank in his both his post-game press conference and then on Monday. Also, I think my own sort of dismissal of Wentz as the quarterback kind of played into what I was thinking. But I was kind of there anyway, but I thought that one of the maybe the most telling one was when somebody asked Ballard, essentially, so these things that Carson doesn't do well, can they be fixed? Which is the question I asked asked Frank on Monday, and I got more of a coachy type answer. I got more of a coachy type answer from Frank about, yes, you can make incremental improvements, that kind of thing, blah, blah, blah. But he said, I think that's something we've got to work through. And I was like, so if these things can't get better, which is kind of what you're saying there, you're just like, it feels like a formality at this point. I might be wrong on this. I could be like way off base. It just feels like a formality when you the funny thing about the way he talked today was he said I'm not going to evaluate any player, and then he spent like the next 40 minutes evaluating Carson's play just depending on the question.
Well, he said sorry, I was just going to point out he also said I wouldn't guarantee anyone's spot on this team next year. And then he spent the rest of the time talking about like what other players are going to do on this team next year. You know, Jonathan Taylor, Nyheim Hines, and DeForest Buckner, and Quiddy Pay. It's like, we know a lot of guys who will be here. Now, I understand you don't want to say Xavier Rhodes will definitely be here, but it says something when you're not including the quarterback in that. That really opens the door. And part of it, too, is like they may just have to see, like, you know, we'll see if we can do better. Because they are in a tough spot, as we've talked about. Not a lot of options, no first-round pick. But just contrast how they handled this with how the Browns handled Baker Mayfield. Just a couple days ago, the GM, Andrew Berry, came out and he said, yeah, Baker's our starter next year. That's our full plan. And he had a worse year than Carson did, and they inherited him from another staff. But the big difference there is Baker is a younger player. There's a little bit of wonder of, like, what is he really when he's not hurt? The way that they're talking about Carson with, you know, you got to hit the layups, you got to get the ball out, you've got to, like, all these little fixes is like, that's how you talk about a 25-year-old, not a 29-year-old. And so I think there's some wheels, and I could just see the wheels turn in his head where, when you got asked, like, can that change at this point? It's like, well, we got him with the coaches we thought were best at working with Carson, and it didn't get there. We had 17 games, and the 17th game was the worst one on those levels. So, yeah, it was not a ringing endorsement for Carson at all.
Evaluation stuff, just kind of ticking him off. He said the thing he told Carson was make layups, which I think we've all seen. Just take the check down sometimes, dude. Nyheim Hines, I mentioned this to Nate before we started the podcast, but it's probably something to bring up here too. I'm starting to feel like Nyheim Hines and his usage is kind of the telltale canary in a coal mine, like what's going on with the quarterback. Because with Luck in 18, you know, 60-some catches. In 19, 44 with Jacoby Brissett. Last year with Phillip Rivers, back up to 63. And then this year with Carson Wentz, back down to 40. And he actually, I think this might surprise most Colts fans, Hines actually played a similar portion of the snaps to what he's played in the past. He was at 31.6 this year. Last year he was at 36.2, so a little heavy, but not much. The year before that, 29.3. And his rookie year he was at 42 because Marlon Mack was hurt for a significant portion of the beginning of the season. But he played like 31.6 is right within the Nyheim Hines window. And he caught 23 less passes and just wasn't really a consistent part of the offense. And I thought Chris Ballard basically said today out loud, without maybe he didn't say it as bluntly as I'm going to say it, But he basically said the quarterback didn't get him involved. That's how I read what he said. So, you know, I said on Sunday and wrote on Sunday that Wentz's season ended up feeling like Jacoby Brissett. And, well, I think they got there in different ways. The Hines stuff, some of the other stuff, it just all fits. And make layups, he said the accuracy, he said you can improve it, but sometimes when it gets back in a game, it reverts back, which felt like we saw that as the season goes along. Shout out to Zach Hicks from who works for SI and does and was doing the mechanics with Carson Wentz thing, because I know he's been on top of that. It felt like as the season went along, he forgot more and more about what he was supposed to be doing mechanically. Trying to think of what another one was. And then I think the other one was just basically get the ball out of your hands. Just get the ball out of your hands.
Yeah. And yeah, he said that's a huge part of Frank's offense.
And this is stuff that I apologize to Colts fans. I know people don't like it when we bring this name up. This is stuff that Andrew Luck did and improved with Frank Reich. Luck got the ball out of his hands really fast in 18. He was his most accurate by far in terms of percentages with Reich. Got the ball out of his hands really quickly. He didn't have much yak that year. He has kind of a surprisingly low amount of yak, but there were a lot of passes to Nyheim Hines. And not to say that Wentz and Luck were ever the same type of, like, same level of player. But in terms of holding onto the ball, running around, throwing downfield, I think there's some of that Wentz did earlier in his career. And with Reich, he made those fixes, and they got better as the season went along. And the other thing with the Luck year is when they got a running game halfway through the season, a really good running game halfway through the season, Luck's productivity took off. He went from a low yards per attempt to almost 9 in the back half of the season. With Carson, his running back took off. His yards per attempt went down in the dumpster. And which is what happened with Jacoby Brissett the next year. They had a seventh-ranked rushing game, I think, in 2019. Same thing, back half of the season. Everyone knows they want to run it. They're all stacked up. Jacoby couldn't take advantage. Different reasons a little bit in terms of why. Jacoby was too afraid to throw the ball downfield. Wentz only wants to throw the ball downfield. But the end result was the same, no yards per attempt, when they should be getting big chunks, as we saw with Andrew Luck.
Yeah, well, what's funny is Ballard talked for 66 minutes, and the only question I recall him saying was off limits was about Andrew Luck, which was just a joke. But it's like, yeah, this Carson conversation gets back to that easily. And that's the thing is what I asked him was, and I knew what he was going to say, but I wanted to see quite how far he'd go with it. But I asked him if he thought that a running back could be the identity of an offense. It's a championship offense in this version of the NFL. And that if he does, Taylor ran for 1,800 yards. So why did that not get to the playoffs? And he pretty much said, yeah, like, I absolutely think he can be our identity, but you still have to throw to win. And that's why I think he's so frustrated and why this is coming out this way with Carson is that he knows he got the best out of Jonathan Taylor. They put the passing game in the easiest possible position. It was everything they wanted. Like, if you had told him before the year, you're going to have Carson Wentz, he's going to start 17 games, and by, like, the final month, all the defenses are stacking the box on Jonathan Taylor, and he's averaging 5 yards a carry, you'd be like, absolutely. We're going to have a dynamic offense. And they didn't, and it consistently didn't. And one thing to keep in mind here is that I think why it feels surprising that they're kind of maybe ready to move on from Wentz is it's like, well, it was just 1 year. He can get better at this. They also know he can get worse at this because it happened in Philly is that when the mechanics started to go and guys started to get hurt and he started to, you know, have self-doubt, you know, that's when he led the league in picks and led the league in sacks. And this year he had Jonathan Taylor for 17 games and he had Michael Pittman for 17 games. What if those guys get hurt next year? Those guys were the entire production of this team. All of a sudden, if you look at Carson's career, 2021, his stats were almost the exact same as 2019. It's kind of like the mid-level. But we've seen the highs and lows. 2017 was the high. 2020 was the low. But what's more likely at this point? Well, the one that happened last year. So I think they're nervous that this could get worse before it gets better.
The other thing is that, you know, you were flying on Monday, so you didn't hear this. But Reich sort of admitted I think in the middle of the season, you know, you talk about what the offense is doing and the identity because you want your team to believe in what you're doing. But he said, Reich said, that the goal is not to run the ball all the time. That's not the goal. It's never been the goal for his offense. Frank Reich's offense is designed to be so multiple that you can't take any one thing away from him. That's what he values in an offense more than anything, is multiplicity. You can't do anything to take it away from them. And they ceased to be that team this year. And if an offense, like, he did it because that was how they had to win. But that's not what he wants to do. What he would prefer to do is run Jonathan Taylor and kill people with that. And then when you come up with that, he throws it over your head. That's what he would like to do. You know, he wants to be able to get in a game where they're stacking up to beat Jonathan Taylor and they actually throw them out of it. That never happened.
Yeah.
It never happened.
And that's the thing, not just over the head, which is what Carson loves to try to do, but just like easy throws too. Like some of these RPO hitch routes and stuff, they missed those a lot down the stretch too. It was amazing going through and pretty much down the stretch, they were using Michael Pittman and almost exclusively for a while on play action and RPOs. And it was amazing how many times Carson either, you know, threw too high, threw too wide. And like, that's a hard guy to miss. He's 6'5". And he was like, if you could just hit some of those throws, like, you don't, if they're going to stack the box and give a cushion to Michael Pittman because they're afraid of him burning you deep, like, just take the 10 yards again and again and again. And the more first downs they give this offense, that's where they find more plays to run with, like, Nyheim Hines. Because that was the other thing I asked Ballard is, you know, if you want to build an identity around Jonathan Taylor, is there room to maximize him and Nyheim Hines in the same offense? He said, yes, we did it last year. What's different last year? Quarterback who got Nyheim Hines the ball and, you know, and could hit some layups. And so,
yeah,
I think they want an offense like Philip. Yeah. My sense from all this was like they liked the offense that Philip Rivers ran. They just wish he was not so close to retirement that they can't plan long term. Like, if they would love that, like, just at this point, they may be realizing like we shot the moon. The shot for the moon with Carson, we may not even need that. We just need like a league average quarterback. Obviously, you want a great one, but this year they're going to have to settle for something other than that because they're in a tough spot. And they may be okay doing that, but we'll see.
Well, I think the biggest thing is just Ballard also said that what you want out of a quarterback position is consistency. You want to know what you're going to get. It's really hard to know what you're going to get from Carson. I mean, towards the end of the season, all you got was bad. But it's really hard to know what you're going to get from him. And what this offense really needed, like, Reich's perfect offense is, he's told us before, his ideal is an offense that throws for 250 and runs for 150. Like I said, can do whatever it needs to. Now, a league average quarterback, you might not average 250, but you can get it up over 200 just by completing passes. That's the biggest thing is down the last 8 games, he only had 2 passing games of over 200 yards. If he just completes short passes, some of those games he's over 200 yards in the Colts passing game, it does plenty. And all he had to do with some of that is just hit Jonathan Taylor, hit Nyheim Hines, throw it to the crossing route. Like, just complete some of them. Even the Arizona game, he missed Ashton Doolin like on a crossing route when Doolin had like 40 yards to go behind him. You know, it's stuff like that. Reich, those crossers and shallow and mesh and all that stuff has been a part of Reich's offense. Like, when they play a man team previous to this year, just crossers all day for 300 yards. And they didn't really do that this year, I think, because of the quarterback. So, I think the Colts think they can't run the offense. Ultimately, I think Frank Reich thinks, I cannot run my offense. I have to run a different version of it in order to win, which I give credit to him for not being so tied to his own thing that he sticks into it and got them to 9-6 with an offense that was essentially one-dimensional. But that's not what he wants to be.
Well, and also, you know, he might be more open to leaning into the Carson Wentz kind of backyard football style if he didn't have Jonathan Taylor. Like, the offense is just built in a different way where they are going to run it a lot, and they're going to create stacked boxes, and you have to be precise, and you have to hit certain things, and you have to be consistent. Like, you can't have this situation where you're running a lot, and then you're going to throw it play action and you just sail it over Michael Pittman's head, which is what happened in the Patriots game. Like, they were not hitting some of these open moments that were not that hard to hit. So it's like, yeah, you need something. Yeah, T.Y. against the Raiders. So it's like, I don't know. They need something they can trust. They're like, we need to be able to trust that when we go play action and a guy's open, you'll hit him. That's what they need. And they cannot trust that right now with Carson. He's not consistent enough. He's a guy who needs to run a lot of passing plays to even kind of get into the rhythm where he has proper mechanics. If you look, he's had like two good drives over the past, you know, month or so. And it was the one against Arizona where they had to drive down and score. And they threw a lot. And then it was one right for the half against the Raiders where he completed seven straight. Both of them were like passing every down. And it's like, that's not what this offense is built for. If that's what it's going to take to get Carson, you know, playing well, it's just not going to happen here.
Or really anywhere in the NFL. unless someone wants to bring Texas Tech's offense, like fully bring Texas Tech's offense.
Unless you want to hire Jim Caldwell where they don't run the ball at all. But yeah, it's...
Is Mike Leach available somewhere? Mike Leach can get hired somewhere. A couple of the other things Ballard said. I didn't love some of the stuff he said about the pass rush. We asked him a lot of questions about why the pass rush hasn't developed, why they had fewer sacks this year than they've ever had under Matt Eberflus. I think he was playing some of it close to the vest because one of our colleagues asked, after I asked the initial pass rush question, he talked mostly about young guys. One of our colleagues followed up and asked about what, you know, should you have brought in a veteran? Should you have done more to have a veteran presence? And he said, yeah, that's something we're going to need to look at. To me, that's an obvious yes. You had 33 sacks this year. Pay and Odangbo, like, Odangbo was always going to be half a season and not very, like, Pay. Ballard told us in May, right after the draft, that they weren't expecting Pay and Odangbo to light it up right away. I've said this before on this podcast. Okay, then get a vet.
Yeah. Now, I know.
Go get somebody.
What's weird about that is he clearly believes, like, he was talking about how, like, you can never have enough cornerbacks. You want to, like, have, like, a million cornerbacks. And he loved how when they were playing more man coverage, the completion percentage was going way down. It's like, yeah, his idea is I want to build the coverage so well that it helps the pass rush. But it's like that only works if guys like Dio Dangbo are on the field. Like, at some point, if you're doing that for his backups, it's like they've got to be good enough to still get home. And you didn't put enough out there to ensure that that would happen. And unfortunately, what ended up happening then is DeForest Buckner, who he loves almost as much as Jonathan Taylor, ended up playing 78% of snaps, double teamed a lot, had some knee issues. And so it's like they've got to have more up front. I don't think they're ever going to go wild there, but they've got to have a rotation to where, you know, if they do get good coverage, they're getting home.
Well, he actually isn't a coverage first guy. He's a pass rush guy. Like, he's pretty consistently said over the years. He said it today. Like, he thinks you have to build the D-line first. They had made, in previous years, they had made some, not like big splashes in free agency, but they'd made some smart free agent plays. Jabal Sheard, Danico Autry, Justin Houston was only $12 million a year over 2 years. I mean, it sounds like a lot, but it's not that much in the world of pass rushing. They got a lot of sacks out of those guys and a lot of consistent sacks out of those guys. And they just didn't go get that guy this year. And we kind of all knew it was going to be an issue and talked about it. When he said that's something we need to look into, I was like, I feel like the answer here is, yes, we should have done that. And we need to do that again because we can't necessarily just expect these young guys to do well. I mean, 33 sacks, never consistent pressure the whole year. Yeah. And sometimes it's almost visually arresting when you watch a different NFL game with the team with a really good pass rush and just see how much pressure they put on quarterbacks. You know, like,
yeah,
watching the Saints play Tampa, which has a really good pass blocking line, like, Brady is getting hit and he's getting hit and he's getting hit and he's getting hit. And there was no game like that with the Colts this year at all. And I I think they need to overhaul the defensive line pretty severely. I mean, Odangbo's back, Buckner's back, Pay's back, Stewart's back. I think you probably can get Tyquan Lewis back and give him a chance coming off the patellar tendon. I don't know if I want anybody else back.
No, it is time to
overhaul. Some of those guys had inflated sack totals that look okay. Like Muhammad had 6 and Ture had 5.5. If Muhammad is doing that in 300 or so snaps, I'm fine. But he's played more and more every year. He played 800 snaps this year. Al-Qadim Muhammad is not an 800 snap player. I know the Colts love him. I know he does everything that the coaches would want somebody to do. He's not an 800 snap a season player. He's got to move down the depth chart if they want to have a pass rush. I don't care that he had 6 sacks. Some of that is sack luck in terms of the one time you get through. I think they need to overhaul it a little bit.
Or like cleaning up on the Texans. I mean, it felt kind of opponent-based on some of those. But like, that's what Sunday's game really brought out too, is it was like, how do you let yourself just get picked apart by a rookie quarterback who is obviously very talented, but he's struggled a lot this year. It's like, you did nothing to affect him. You did nothing to get him back into some of these bad habits. Nothing. They hit him 2 times on like 34 dropbacks, whereas Carson Wentz got sacked 6 times, and Jaguars defenders were talking about like how they felt like they got in his head and won the battle. Like, that's what happens with this in this league, is like they start getting hit enough and they start thinking about the rush and they start getting affected by it. Like, if this league's way too easy to just have them stand back there and throw that way. And if you think that, like, you know, Kenny Moore has to play at a Pro Bowl level, almost all pro level every game to make this work, because then he didn't do it the final 2 weeks and they lost both games. It's like the margin for error was very low, especially if they start to have an injury. Can you imagine if they lose Kenny Moore? They lose DeForest Buckner? Like, they have got to get more of a chance there.
I can, because I've covered the games. They don't look good. The other thing that was interesting, the other thing, and one of the other spots that's important here, was we asked several times about left tackle. He said Eric Fisher was a short term. I think he said fix. I don't know if I would call it a fix. He was definitely a short term option. And I think this is another one. He tried to give Eric Fisher. These guys don't want to tear somebody apart. They like, it's not the way the Colts operate. They don't believe in tearing people apart publicly. And so he tried to say that, you know, he thought that although Fisher had some issues in pass pro, you know, it was impressive that he was able to come back and play 15 games. But I thought that the question that he answered right before that I asked was maybe more telling. Because I asked him if Matt Pryor could be a short-term fix, and he said maybe. And you liked Eric Fisher that much, you wouldn't have said that about a swing tackle who only played one game at the position. You just wouldn't. And I don't know what Fisher's going to cost, but can you bring back a guy who's going to give up 8 sacks? I don't think so. He said, what Ballard said was, there's short-term options. There's long-term options. We need to find a long-term option. We might have to take a short-term option again. He didn't say that it wasn't going to be Eric Fisher. But
I mean, they can't. I don't think they can roll that back and be serious. I mean, I know that there's data that shows that guys maybe the second year out of that injury are significantly better. But, you know, it's also a big dude who's, what is he going to be, 32 years old? So you're risking a lot at that position. You know, but the problem is that he just turned 31. The problem that they're going to run into, though, is if they are serious about getting another quarterback, they don't have enough resources to get a long-term left tackle and a quarterback they feel good about. They just don't. They don't have a first-round pick. And if they add another quarterback, they're going to eat $15 million and Carson Wentz to have him not play. I haven't looked at all the free agent left tackles. Maybe there's, you know, but the long-term fix is like, that's a very hard position. They're almost all long-term fixes at that position go in the first round. Or they get, you know, they hit free agency and you just dump money on them. So I have a feeling, based on how they've worded this, I think they would be much more okay with a short-term fix as long as they got the quarterback who can execute the offense and make teams pay for stacking the box, and they'll deal with some pressure versus, I think that's more likely than they just...
Just get the ball out of his hands. Yes. Just get the ball out of your hands. That helps
a lot. He brought that up. He said that's why it's so hard to rush the passer, is teams get the ball out so quick, but ours doesn't. Yeah. You know, so it's like,
I know he said that in an answer to a quarterback question. Yeah.
And the funny thing about it is, like, if you look at it in that way, you can understand why he signed Eric Fisher. Is like, the idea was, you know, we're not asking you to block forever, but that's how it ended up being because of Carson. And, you know, he just holds the ball so long sometimes. And, I mean, Eric Fisher's not going to block that long. He's just not. You know, I mean, I don't know that Charles Leno was going to block for that long either. Some of those plays that he extended. Now, the problem for Eric Fisher, though, is I think he was even worse in pass rush than Ballard imagined. And he got beat quickly off the snap, too. So, I don't know. I think there will be a short-term fix. There will be a Charles Leno this free agency where, or maybe Matt Pryor, they just do that, where they just got to get the offense functional, because the rest of the offensive line is great and they need a quarterback who is more trustworthy.
One other thing that I think, he said they had work to do at tight end, which I think is not only true and not only indicative of what they think is going to happen with Jack Doyle, but it's music to the ear of Colts fans who want to get some sort of help playmaking wise. Wide receiver, he downplayed the idea of needing a wide receiver again. But the way I look at it, this team needs a 2 and a 3. At the least.
Yeah. Because T.Y. is probably...
My assumption is that T.Y. Hilton is going to retire. And Zach Pascal should at best be a 4. And Paris Campbell, based on health, I think you have to start out planning him as a 5. Because of his health. And if it turns into more, if he finally stays healthy and realizes his potential, woohoo! But you got to start out planning for him as a 5. Competing with, like, Strong and these guys for a roster spot. That leaves a 2 and a 3, at the very least. And Ballard downplayed the idea of going after a receiver again. I know free agent wide receivers are generally, there's a lot that it's littered with bad contracts. The prices came down a little bit last year for some guys. You know, like, I think the Cardinals probably got good value out of A.J. Green. Like, what do you have, like 50, 60 catches, something like that for Arizona at not very much money?
They messed up not signing one last year, by the way, because there was a log jam at that position and the cap was down. And there were receivers who were like, I just want a job. And it's like, yeah, you could have really had it easy and still chose not to do it. Yeah, I just don't think he values that position that much beyond having a number one. Like, I think he thinks we need one dude who can kind of go up and moss people when we need a 3rd and 10 conversion. But beyond that, this offense is going to operate much more as a, you know, open opportunities for these guys to get the ball in space, open them up with the play design, have them do something. But I've thought for a little while that they could really use like a playmaking tight end. Like, they could really use what people want Mo Alie-Cox to be, because that middle of the field right now is just kind of barren.
Reich desperately wants it. Reich desperately wants that player. That's why Ebron was here for 2 years. You know, they desperately want that player. It's just whether or not they're going to put the investment into it or find a player. I don't know. What's the situation with Njoku in Cleveland? He said he wants to re-sign.
Yeah, he just played out the fifth-year option, wants to re-sign. That would be a he is a lot of what they would like. Because Njoku, his struggles is like, if you want him to be this guy who navigates zone and like, he's not really going to do that, but he is deadly, like ball in the hands in the middle of defense, like run tight end screens or just get him the ball and have him run with it. Like that, he is what people think Mo'Ali Cox is. So that would be a good one. There's a few different options like that too. Like I saw
OJ Howard.
Yeah, Dalton Schultz had a nice year for Dallas.
He's Schultz less the athletic. Probably on the higher. With Ballard, I guess the hard part is with Ballard, I always assume that they're going to be shopping in more of the somewhere below the top of the class. But
well, I think Njoku will be at the top of the class though.
They need to come up with, I don't know. As bad as free agent wide receiver plays are, I think that they should be on the lookout for someone in that. If they think there's a some kind of, just check the market, see what it does, hope for something to come out, and then probably draft another one. You know, that's what they've been trying to address it through the second round. Paris Campbell was second round. Michael Pittman was a second round. They've taken some flyers on late round guys. You know, Michael Strawn wasn't ready this year. Just wasn't able to handle all of the details of the Colts offense. You know, they've taken flyers on those kind of guys. They're trying to build through the draft, I think, because it's so hard to find receivers who are going to be consistent and that you can rely on in free agency. So maybe they go back to that in the second or third round this year. But I don't know. That position to me is more important than he made it sound.
Yeah, I think part of him, though, is thinking, like, how much value are we going to get out of that position in terms of volume? Because you've got Jonathan Taylor, Nyheim Hines, Michael Pittman. Like, the way this is drawn up, you know, how much – I mean, they got to get more than they have this year. Like, they're the only team that doesn't have two players with more than 395 receiving yards. So that they have to get better than that. But, like, I still think he wonders, like, if we drop – you know, $8 million on a receiver, like, is it worth it? Well, is this offense built for that? So
no, they dropped $8 million on T.Y. Hilton.
Have been more. Jim Irsay dropped $8 million on T.Y. Hilton.
That's very, very fair and accurate. Maybe that could be part of it. I just think you need. Wright talked about. I keep thinking back to after the 2018 season, the 2019 combine. T.Y. was coming off the big year. They didn't have really a second option that year until they got Dontrell Inman, who had just an unbelievable second half. Not as a super player, but like he was really good at like the four catch, 56 yard, all of them first downs type of game. And Reich was saying that they he wants to have two guys that you can count on to win on third down when you need somebody to beat man coverage and just get open. And they don't have that. They have one guy that they can count on to do that.
And that would really cultivate, if they're going to switch quarterbacks, I mean, a lot of it's like, here are the guys you can trust. And if you have a quarterback bring in and be like, hey, make sure you throw the ball to Zach Pascal, you can really trust him. I think that's a little harder sell than, you know, some second-round guy or a free agent. And, like,
and you know, Pascal's receivers, a free agent, too. Pascal's a free agent, too. He could leave.
They could really use something in the slot, the more I think about it. Like, they had nothing out of the slot. And yet, like, that's a way, you know, maybe I'm blinded by my experience with Marvin Jones and Golden Tate had such a great combo where Marvin would work kind of deeper routes and Golden underneath. And it was really hard to cover. And that was how you got mismatches on guys who are playing slot corner in this league because of the run fits, but they're not the best cover corners out there. Like right now, they're not taking advantage of that as much as they could if they had a guy who's a pretty good slot receiver.
Also, just so you know, it's not just that they were the only team in the league this year with only one receiver over 400 yards. It's the first time since 5. If you set the bar at 500 yards, this is the first time since 1988 that the Colts haven't had two pass catchers get over 500 yards in the season. I was two.
And they played 17 games.
I was two at that time.
Yeah, I wasn't on this earth.
That's a long time ago. There's some really bad quarterbacks in that stretch. Like, really, really bad. And they still had receivers who managed to get more than 500 yards. So,
yeah. I mean, the Detroit Lions had, like, five guys with 400 receiving yards. Now, they didn't have a Michael Pittman. But, like, it just isn't that hard to produce at other spots if you have a quarterback who will hit throws and a receivers who will catch the ball and make plays. They didn't have either of those beyond Michael Pittman.
I think they need to add – we talked about this last time. Sometimes when you have needs, you should add a rookie and a vet. And receiver to me feels like a real spot where it's a rookie and a vet situation. Add both.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and almost to the point where, like, if they're going to change quarterbacks, I mean, you can see, like, the tension that's building with that position. Like, they're messing – like, they don't want to mess around anymore. You need to have an environment where it's, like, step in, run the offense, play the way we want you to play, and we will have the guys to get it done. And they got a lot of it right now with Jonathan Taylor and Michael Pittman, a pretty good offensive line, but they're missing a couple of key spots like left tackle and other receivers. So I would just cultivate the best offense you can. The question is, what is it going to take them to get that quarterback, and does that limit the ability to get those? And I don't know.
I keep thinking that at quarterback, what you want is the franchise guy, okay? I think most people don't know if that's necessarily possible this year based on who's available and what's available in the draft, what's available in free agency. Beyond that, I just keep coming back to that they paid an Alex Smith price for Wentz. And I think that what they need for the offense, if they can't have the top line guy, the top 10 guy, is what Alex Smith was for the Chiefs.
Yeah.
He didn't give you a ton, but he gave you enough. He gave you enough to take a good roster to the playoffs. The Chiefs had trouble winning in the playoffs. But he was good enough to get them there.
Yeah, and but you know what he did? Enough. What he did was he won them division titles, got into the playoffs, couldn't get them further than that, but bought a GM and a head coach time to go make
to find the guy. Exactly.
Mahomes. Like, it's like a half step. Because right now, it's like you're going to go from nothing to what? The next Patrick Mahomes? How? Like, it just isn't there. They've got to find a half measure right now. You know, one guy I've thought about that would be – it would take a few dominoes for this to work, but that I think fits at least stylistically is Tua. Like, Tua is a big-time yak-producing safe quarterback who just is a little limited down the field. It's like the opposite of Carson Wentz.
I don't have any feel for Tua to have an opinion back. I haven't seen him play enough.
Yeah. Well, it would just take – I mean, the Dolphins have to make some other move at quarterback. They've been in the Deshaun Watson rumors, and it may not come together. But if they do that, you know, he could be out there. It's a risk, though, obviously, because he's going to be in his third system in 3 years. But what Reich has talked about, what Ballard's talked about, is like they really miss getting into, like, OTAs and – taking this from the ground floor. Like, to not have that makes it harder to get this. And so if they could get a guy like Tua who, like, really takes to learning structure, he is such a good structure quarterback. He's just not very good out of structure. He's kind of like an Alex Smith in that way, but a little less mobile. Is that, like, I could see that working. I could see at least working enough to, kind of like you said, get this team. I think a Tua-led Colts team would get to the playoffs, and then that gives you some more leash. They can't be missing. They cannot miss the playoffs again next year.
Well, Ballard keeps talking about, you know, you don't want to take a chance. You don't want to take a chance on the wrong quarterback in a draft. Well, the way you do that is you have somebody there who can give you chances while you wait for the chance to come along. That's what happened with the Chiefs. The Chiefs had a guy there who could get them to the playoffs until they found somebody they really, really should go for. And I feel like that's the situation the Colts are in. I think they hoped that Wentz could be that guy. The problem is Wentz is too volatile and inconsistent and doesn't fit his level of play sort of ends up sort of in that range, but it's how he gets there that's the problem. You know, the 27 touchdowns and 7 picks, which is a misleading stat anyway. But it's how he gets there that's the problem, where they just have, you know, you can't have a season where it's like, what is it, 5 weeks, 6 weeks of really, really good, and then 11 weeks of crap. It needs to be more of a midline so that you can count on it. And then you can have the guy who you can count on to keep you in the mix. Maybe you catch fire in one of those seasons where in one of the, like, you know, one out of every three seasons where an elite quarterback doesn't win. But more importantly, you can contend while you're looking for the guy and getting a chance at the guy.
Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely what they need. Is they need stability. They need the same quarterback they can develop 1 year to the next. That was their hope with Carson. But I think the big lesson they learned with Carson and why they'll do this differently is, like, you cannot, on a lot of levels, you cannot teach an old dog new tricks. And they're trying to teach this 29-year-old guy to play in a way he's never played, because you're tantalized by what he can do. But at the end of the day, he's got to do what you need him to do. And it's different when they get a quarterback they feel is more on the ground floor, like a rookie or a Tua, who really hasn't developed in any offense so far. Like, Tua doesn't have Tua's style is getting the ball out and yak, but it's like the way they talked about what they need to do with Wentz is like how you talk about what you need to do with a 23-year-old. And I think they've never really had that chance to get this guy that's like, okay, he's a little rough around the edges, he's a little raw, but we're going to teach him, because that's what they are. Like Frank Reich, Marcus Brady, Press Taylor, like, they really want to develop a guy from OTAs to training camp to regular season 1 year to the next. And they don't have a guy they trust to take to that kind of learning. And they just need to go find one. And it could be, I'm not ruling out that they draft one in the second round or trade up to the end of the first and just try to find their Mac Jones. But it's tough, obviously, because they're not in a spot where they can dictate that very well. But I think that's more what they want is I would be surprised if they go more for a guy that's like a Teddy Bridgewater or Cam Newton, where it's like they just are what they are. Jameis Winston, like, you're not changing those guys fundamentally. You're either going to play the way they are or you don't go after them. So I think they'll try something different.
Well, that's us recapping the end of the Chris Ballard press conference. We're going to have a lot more stuff coming out from that. Like Nate said at the top, there was a lot of stuff that turns into stories there. But it's going to be interesting to watch.
I think you wrote like four stories already. So
I wrote five.
So you've taken the
right.
Yeah, and I wrote one.
I wrote five that you didn't write. I did another quick. It was like a primer for what you wrote that Nat needed. But that was just kind of the way the day worked out. So
don't worry, I think I have enough to choose from. I'll catch up.
But the thing is, like, yours is the story that everybody wanted to read. So mine's just kind of filler. I was getting the stuff out that isn't, well, I shouldn't say Quentin Nelson getting a long-term contract and then wanting to do that. We could get into that a little bit more on a future podcast, I think.
Ballard can't guarantee any player will be here. But by the way, Quentin Nelson's a Colt. They're going to sign him.
Oh, trust me. If my Twitter is any indication, lots of people picked up on that little dichotomy there. But yeah, so there. We're going to have more stories coming out about the Colts philosophy and what they're going to do for the Colts Cover 2 podcast. For the moment, we'll keep doing this. I'm Joel Erickson, and this is Nate Atkins, and I apologize if you heard my dog squeak his toy.